right ahead, Wesley.
Thank you for briefly. This is November, X-ray, Juliet November. I have a few questions. One, usually when I start to talk about something is that I represent a certain amount of knowledge in this area, but right now it looks like I'm kind of lost, and I need the help of Glenn, maybe Eric, if he's there. That's about the oscilloscopes, because I'm actually shopping for a good one. And then I wanted to ask a question about the RCL meters. In regards to the oscilloscopes, the band that I'm mostly concentrated on is Tektronix, and I just don't understand certain things. Usually people jump into the digital phosphor oscilloscopes, and one of them is TDS 754. I do not understand what is the difference between TDS 754A and 754D. That's one thing. And also, usually when I'm trying to get is the analog and the digital signals, the most important for me is the square wave. In regards to digital, square wave with different width of the wave. So it's general use, is nothing special. And another thing that I do not understand is there is a TDS 3054C, and it's $3,100 right now, and people are jumping into that on eBay. And at the same time, there is a nice LaCroix, which has a great name, 44XY, the digital oscilloscope, and this one is actually for $2,000. There's only one bit on it, so if somebody would actually help me out just to get to the proper road before I spend my money. Back to you, Dick, and thanks to you.
You're walking down a fairly difficult road, as you already know, Wesley. Somewhat similar to a man who just entered ham radio. He opens up QST magazine. He's trying to decide what transmitter or what transceiver he should buy, and he's got about 35 different choices. And so it's not easy to find the one that fits your requirements, your wallet, and so on. And you've also got to consider used equipment. Well, when it comes to modern-day oscilloscopes, you've got about the same number of choices. I'll bet you there's at least 35 different scopes out there that will partially fulfill your requirement, some of them doing it much better than others. Tremendous advancements have occurred in oscilloscopes in the last, let me pick a number, 5 or 10 years. A good number of the oscilloscopes, particularly by Tektronix, among other companies, are now digitizing oscilloscopes. In other words, the actual incoming waveform is put into an analog to digital converter. The digitized signal is then processed in various ways so that the waveform itself can be displayed on the screen with rather high resolution at rather high frequencies. Along with that waveform, the oscilloscope will display 2, 3, and 4 waveforms in different colors, and also in those different colors, it will write across the screen very valuable information. Let me drop it. You can program the oscilloscope to tell you what is the true RMS voltage of that waveform, what is the average voltage of that waveform, what is the positive peak, the negative peak, what's the peak to valley, what's the peak envelope power. You can use the individual scope probes in pairs and triplets, where if you're using them in pairs, you can use them in the A plus B mode or A minus B mode. In other words, by using two separate scope probes, you could look at a dual differential signal. Each individual signal, the scope probe, the A probe and the B probe, would be measuring that signal to ground, but yet you will be displaying on the screen in the A minus B mode what the signal characteristics are like if you had an ideal probe that floated in the air and only told you the voltage between those two wires of a twisted pair, we'll say, and create an extremely light loading and tell you what the twisted pair characteristics are. And again, the RMS, true RMS, average, mean, DC value, AC value, peaks, positive peak, negative peak. You can have it process all kinds of ways. You can now do Fourier transforms on that waveform and tell you what are the frequency components, what is the maximum, what is the dominant frequency, what are the second, third, fourth harmonics, how amplitude distributed are though, and so on. In other words, some of the modern day digitizing oscilloscopes have many of the characteristics of a spectrum analyzer. So I'm not convinced that the majority of the people, let me drop, I'm not convinced that that very many of the people on this TechNet are going to give you direct information that'll solve your source problem, your sourcing problem, Wesley. You're into a fairly deep area here. I can only tell you some of the buzzwords. I do know that once you select a model number that's available to you by eBay or any other source, and if you do a sufficient Google search, you will eventually find a website that will describe that instrument for you, unfortunately in their vocabulary, but at least it will describe the instrument, tell you what is its accuracy specifications, what's the maximum minimum frequency, what's the maximum minimum voltage it will properly indicate, and what parameters it will calculate for you and print across that screen, and give you a beautiful display that you can then put into a compact disc or any other medium that you like. These folks will, as a recording device, my goodness, can they do magic. I've used one of those scopes a couple of years ago to do an extremely elaborate experiment, and unfortunately, the manual only partially helped me. I needed a lot of help from other people around in order to properly key up all of these features. But the oscilloscope wouldn't make a cup of coffee for me, but it came close, Wesley. So it's going to take more research, and I'm a little bit unhappy to say you may not find as much information from this technical net as you'd like. You're into a fairly deep area. Modern-day oscilloscopes have gone a long way compared to what they used to do. Anybody has any further hints for Wesley, give us your call letters right now. And if not, after a little bit of delay, Wesley will pick up. N2XJN with a delay for anyone else to help. K2RIW in the TechNet.
KC2QIQ.
Okay, I heard two people. KC2QIQ is one of them. Who was the other?
AC2AZ.
Okay. We've got Bill and Glenn in that order, in reverse order. Glenn first. Go right ahead, Glenn.
I just wanted to offer a very, very simple difference between LaCroix and the Tektronix. Basically, what I've found, at least in the last 10 years of oscilloscopes, if you really want a better display, the LaCroix is probably going to give you a much clearer, brighter display, and much easier to look at and view the data right on screen. The Tektronix, I think for the price, bang for the buck, you're going to get a little bit more storage out of them, a little bit higher frequency response. So from that end, but the displays are not quite as good. I don't want to go too much deeper into the differences between, the exact models and what they do, but I certainly would say that, if display is a really, really big thing, let's put it this way. Like when you're talking about 500 megahertz scopes, the LaCroix are like in the 500 megahertz arena are called the wave runners. Those are really, really neat high-frequency oscilloscopes. The TDS and TDA 1000 series and above are the higher-frequency Tektronix scopes. But there again, now you're talking, $5,000 and above, Wesley, so I'm not exactly sure what you need to do with the oscilloscope. But let me pass it back to Dick. K2RIW, KC2QIQ.
Yeah, LaCroix may give you a prettier picture. I wonder now, one of the things that he's going to have to worry about a little bit is he's going to be using it as a instrumentation to gather certain kinds of data. That data eventually is going to have to appear in a report. And to a skilled person using a Tektronix digitizing oscilloscope and the way it can make a beautiful display on a electronic medium by which you can then sneaker it over, you know, with your flash drive or with your CD disc or whatever. You can your compact disc or your DVD. You can record the information and then eventually get it onto the page of a report. I've done that, or with the help of some of the people I was working with, and you can get some really eye-catching pages of information that demonstrate whatever principle you want. So if you intend to do documentation, definitely consider the ease with which documentation can be conveyed from the screen onto electronic media and eventually onto the page of your report. I called him Bill before, and I should have called him Bob. Sorry about that. AC2AZ, go right ahead, Bob. K2LAW in the TechNet.
Okay, I'm going to try and get it right this time. I have a stopwatch here, so 1 minute is. Leslie, I've been buying LaCroix now, I don't know, a couple of years now. I've probably bought $100,000 worth of LaCroix in the last couple of years. If you're buying a digital scope, first of all, I have no clue what you want to use it for, what the bandwidth is, how deep your memory is. But certainly, if you want to take pictures from your scope and put them into a report, you want to make sure, especially the older scopes that are not Windows, the new Windows scopes are not a problem. The old ones, you want to make sure that they print out to a JPEG or a BMP. If not, you're going to have trouble converting the file or image into something. And you want to make sure it's saved as a screen, because you can also save individual waveforms, which is probably not what you want. That'll give you a numerical value of the waveform that you can use in Excel. That's not what you want. You want to image capture the screen for your reports. Drop it for a minute. Got that one right. If you want to email me, tell me what you're doing, I could probably help you a little bit. I bought Tektronix, LaCroix, Hewlett-Packard, used them all. I have my personal preferences, but certainly if you're looking at the $2,000 range, I don't know if you're going to be getting a Windows scope for that. Not right now, today. You may have to wait a few years for those other scopes to come offline. But I'm not sure who it was. I think Glenn had mentioned about the WaveRunner. I filled my lab with WaveRunners, and they're a very good scope. I really got into LaCroix only because one day the Tektronix guy did not show up anymore. They moved him off the island, and a LaCroix guy showed up, so it was a moment of opportunity. Populated with LaCroix scopes. They all have the same interfaces, so people don't have to, you know, cry that this is my scope and I'm used to using this one. They're all identical. Drop it for a minute.
And in that July 2009 issue of Monitoring Times, there is a link to a blog, and it lists Mars frequencies, and I did a quick database, and pulling up about, it looks like about 28 frequencies. Most are in the 4,000 kilohertz range, 4 megs. They're in the 4 meg range. That's it. This is N2PQJ.
Good information, Steve, and I thank you. So, Monitoring Times, July 2009 issue. I think you said you found that on a website, and there is a blog talking about all of the Mars frequencies and a lot of additional information. Wonder if you're able to get that there, Rich, N2EO, K2LIW.
I did, Dick, N2EO, thank you.
Very fine. Now, Mel, when it comes to using a Smith chart, in order to find an unknown impedance, where in your particular example you started off with a 25 ohm resistor and an amount of reactance that would equal a total of a 3-to-1 standing wave ratio, and when I did the mathematics of that, that turned out to be 32.3 ohms of reactance required with a 25 ohm resistor in order to equal a 3-to-1. So I started off with that, and yes, if the resistor was being added, you are adding a 25 ohm resistor. If the resistor you're adding was exactly at the antenna, or if the feed line between the antenna and the place you're adding the resistor is an exact number of half wavelength, where the impedance exactly repeats of assumingly low loss coax, then adding the extra 25 ohm resistor will bring the whole apparent impedance up to 50 ohms resistive, and that helps you find the reactive component. However, my analysis on that one, Bell tells me that if the feed line is of unknown resistance, or unknown length, and you're doing the measurement in the shack, if the feed line is of unknown length, and you're not putting the added 25 ohm resistor right at the antenna or every half wavelength away from it, then light becomes quite a bit more complicated, and calculating what impedance, just to calculate the magnitude of the reactance, irrespective of whether or not it's a capacitive or an inductor reactance, to calculate the magnitude of the original resistance and the original capacitance or inductance is a bit more difficult, was my first analysis, but I bet you there's a lot more to the system you've already ironed out. So over to you, Mel. K2KY, K2RIW, and the next night.
This is K2KEY. Well, I did this years and years ago. I figured this out. And then I made the measurements with a really good instrument, a known instrument that really is very definitive. And basically, I wound up with about the same result. These measurements were taken right at the antenna. The original question was asked that with a simple handheld SWR bridge, can I at the make the measurements with this instrument and get an idea of the resistive and the reactive components, Dick, over.
And I think the answer is yes, but it's a little more difficult than first meets the eye. To admit that when you start up with a 25 ohm resistor, and by my calculation, a 3-to-1 Viswire requires a 32.3 ohms to the nearest tenth of an ohm. 32.3 ohms of reactance in series with 25 ohms of resistance on a 50 ohm system will give you exactly a 3-to-1 standing wave ratio. That means that your unknown impedance, so to speak, is somewhere on that circle that you draw on the Smith chart, where you set your compass sharp point at the center and the pencil itself on the 3 on the right hand side and swing a circle. You now know for various lengths of coax cable your complete impedance is somewhere on that circle, one of the dots on that circle, so to speak. And the main thing to consider is that, let me drop, as you use various lengths of coax cable, and I'm talking about lengths here in wavelengths, but it doesn't matter, you're walking around that circle. At one particular point, when you stop at the right-hand side of the circle for that particular length of cable, which might be, oh, it's not at the antenna, by the way. It is some distance from the antenna. I'm going to guess it's a little bit more than an eighth away from the antenna. You will have a pure resistance. It will be 3 times 50 or 150 ohms of resistance as a pure resistor apparent when you look into that piece of cable. That is, I'm going to pick a number, 50 degrees electronically longer than the location of the antenna. You'll see 150 ohms resistance. Go another quarter wave further downrange, and you'll see a pure resistor of 16 and 2/3 ohms. In between, you'll see every number of ohms of resistance and some amount of reactance that you want. What I'm getting at is that for an unknown length of cable, all you know right now is you've got a 3-to-1 Viswire, you're somewhere on that circle. Every one of those dots where you could stop on the circle is an apparent real impedance of some number of ohms, usually different than 25, and some number of ohms of reactance, usually different than 32.3. And so those numbers continuously keep changing, and when you choose that particular position to make a measurement, you may not be able to know what is the impedance of the antenna without knowing the length of cable to the antenna. So if the antenna was completely available to you, life becomes a lot easier. Or if you know that your length of cable is some exact number of half wavelengths at this operating frequency, then yes, you can do a lot more with it. But my first impression was you would like the number of, let me drop, the 25 ohm resistor that you added to give you a fixed horizontal displacement on the Smith chart. And I came to the conclusion that that's not necessarily true. The fixed horizontal displacement is true at the points on the Smith chart where you've got a pure resistance, either high or low. There's a fixed position, a fixed magnitude of horizontal displacement because of adding the resistor. But at all other places, the amount of horizontal displacement is not so easily calculated, so to speak. So I'm a little bit afraid there's more to it, but maybe I didn't absorb many of the details of what you were telling us last week. I suspect there's more to it. And give me a little more information there, Mel. It's a beautiful technique if we can iron out the details. K2KEY, K2LIW in the second half.
W-E-1-G-R-B, repeater.
Okay, this is K2KEY. Yeah, a lot of confusion, and I think that's why I've thought all over again. I took my handheld SWR bridge. At that time, I didn't have a handheld one SWR bridge, but fairly compatible with two. And what I did, first thing we're going to do, no, I did not put the resistor in to begin with. The first thing I did was I measured the original SWR. Let's start with the original SWR, which, okay, for argument's sake, with this demonstration, we'll say it was 3:1. So what I did is I swung a circle, a complete circle on a Smith chart, opened the compass up, put the pin on the center, and I swung a complete circle of 3:1 pick. Without, not forget about resistor, just to start with, a 3:1 SWR measure. You follow so far, over.
I sure do, and that one is quite clear. So you know that the impedance you're about to try to ascertain, in theory, is somewhere along that circle, depending on the length of line you're using, or what the original impedance was. And a 3:1 standing wave ratio happens to be a reflection coefficient of exactly 0.5. In other words, the one other thing that your standing wave ratio meter is telling you, in its own funny way when it tells you you've got a 3:1, is it says for every volt you send up that cable, exactly half of that voltage comes back down toward you as a reflection. That's what 3:1 really means. And if anyone wants to know how to do that, you take the standing wave ratio number, quite often they call it S, you plug it into the formula S minus 1 over S plus 1, and do that division, and you'll end up with 0.5 when S is equal to 3.0. K2KEY, K2LIW.
First, like I say, we make the circle with the 3:1. We now put this 25 ohm resistor
in the long B repeater.
And like I say, at this time it was measuring at the antenna. It happened to be the antenna I was able to get to it, and I didn't want to worry about line losses or anything of that sort. And I put this resistor in, and I measure now an SWR of 2:1. So I take my compass, put the pin on the sensor again, and I swing a complete circle now of a 2:1 SWR. Follow this, over.
Connected.
Yes, I do.
A4GAF conference.
If the original standing wave ratio was exactly 3:1, and if the original impedance of the antenna was 25 ohms of resistance with 32.3 ohms of reactance, those two numbers, by the way, make exactly 3:1 with very small error. And then I add 25 ohms of resistance so that the 25 ohms of resistance of the antenna plus the 25 ohms that you're adding makes it now 50 ohms of resistance with the same 32.3 of reactance. That new impedance, calculates to be close to 2 to 1, but if you want to be exact, it's 1.8875. A little bit below 2 to 1, but very close to 2 to 1. Over to you, Mel, K2LIW.
Let's say 2 to 1, the demonstration. So the original circle, we'll call that circle 1, was the 3 to 1. I put the resistor in the line. I get 2 to 1 now. I make the 2 to 1. We'll call that circle number 2. Now, I normalize that resistor, that 25 ohm resistor, which will give me now, divided by 50, will give me 0.5. I may now take that 0.5 and I add that to the 3 circle. In other words, make the original first circle, make that 3.5. And I also add that to the second circle, make that 1.5. And I swing now, using the compass, put it on 1.5, open it to 3.5, the compass, and swing a third circle. You follow that, Dick? Over.
Yes, but I've got one further question. The 25 ohm resistor you're adding, when you normalize it to a 50 ohm chart, is a magnitude 0.5. But now there's two different ways you can come up with magnitude 0.5 on a Smith chart. I could measure from the center of the Smith chart over to the resistive line that's labeled 0.5. That's one distance. Or I can start off at the far left-hand side of the Smith chart and move over to the 0.5 circle. That's a much bigger distance. If I was plotting nothing but the 25 ohm resistor by itself, I would be starting from the left-hand side of the chart and moving over to the 0.5 resistive circle. That's a big spacing. The small spacing is from the 0.5 to the center of the chart. So which one of those 0.5s magnitudes did you add, Mel? K2KEY, K2LIW?
It is to the right side. So you see where the the first circle crosses the 3 on the right side. I added 0.5 there. I added then 0.5 to the center to the right, so that I could swing the third circle using that as my compass swing to be able to make the circle. That was my third circle measurement, Dick. Over.
Okay, you've used some nice words, but there's more than one way of interpreting those words, Mel. On the right-hand side of the 3-to-1 circle, one way to move to the 0.5 to the right would be to move from 3 to 3.5, a very small distance. That's maybe not what you mean, but I would put a dot at 3.5 on the horizontal line. If I then move 0.5 to the left of the 3, I would be at around 2.5. But maybe you wanted to go 0.5 to the left of the 2.0, and that would be a little bit less than 1.5. So, are you moving a fixed distance when you move 0.5, or are you using the markings on the chart to add 0.5 to 3 and go to the chart marking of 3.5? As you can tell, there's more than one interpretation of moving 0.5. Over to you, Mel, K2LIW.
Exactly. Making it 3.5. Look at the circle, the first circle, where it crosses the 3. I'm going to add 0.5 there, making it 3.5 over there. And I'm going to make inside the circle, I'm going to go from 1 to 1.5 inside the circle fix. So going to the right, both those measurements, I'm adding that 0.5 going to the right. So I'm going to 3.5 on the first circle where it crosses, and I'm going to 1.5 to the right inside from the center. Over.
Okay, beautiful. So you're using chart markings to add 0.5 to the 3, meaning 3.5, and you put a dot there. You took away 0.5 away from the 2, and you're around approximately the 1.5, in my case 1.4 something, on my chart. I've now got those two dots, and I think I'm going to use those two dots on the horizontal axis as one of them is the pivot and one of them is the pencil of my compass. And if I swing a circle in that manner, I'm going to hit the 2-to-1 circle, but I'm convinced it is not hitting it in the right spot. Over to you, Mel, K2RIW.
Action, put the pin on 1.5, open the compass up to 3.5, swing another circle. Now, you'll notice that the third circle intersects the second circle at 1.05 plus J.72 and 1.05 minus J.72. Do you see that, Dick? Over.
Yes, you're going to have to repeat that one more time. I've got these two dots on the horizontal axis. One of them's at 3.5, one of them's very close to 1.5. I think you want me to put the sharp point of the compass on the 1.5, the pencil of the compass on the 3.5, and swing a circle until it hits the 3-to-1 Vizwar circle, is what I think you're saying. Is that correct, Mel? Go ahead.
Are you going to swing a whole circle? Yes. You're going to put the pin on 1.5, put the open pencil, open it up to the pencil so it goes to 3.5, and swing a complete 360 circle. And I want to read the point where circle number 3 intersects circle number 2, Dick. Over.
Okay. Now, the right place, because the normalized reactance, in my case, I calculate a reactance of 32.3. When I normalize that, it becomes the number 0.646. Therefore, the original impedance, before we did any resistor modification, but with the 50-ohm, with the 25-ohm resistor added, is going to be a dot on the 1-to-1 resistive circle and the 0.63 reactance line, plus and minus. That's the real impedance when the 25-ohm resistor has been added at the antenna. And right now, I'm not convinced that the method of swinging the compass that you just described will hit that point. It hits a point in the neighborhood. I'm a little bit afraid there's an error there, Mel. K2KEY, K2RIW.
Well, I'm just doing it now, and I'm reading the exact spot where it's hitting circle number 3. It's hitting circle number 2 at 1.05 plus J.72, Dick. And the same thing on the bottom. I just did it again, Dick, with my compass. Over.
.72. Okay. You used a different amount of reactants than I did. You used 25 ohms, and I think you told me 30 ohms of capacitor reactants. And when the 25 ohm resistor is added, it becomes 50 plus 30. And the 30, I think, comes out to be 0.6 or the 0.7 on the normalized chart. Okay, I see the method, and I'm going to pass it back to you, Mel. K2LIW.
Okay, for demonstration, I rounded things off. I could say if I did it mathematically, you know, I may come up with a little different answers, but I was just assuming that it's very close to the original SWR being 3, adding resist to the SWR. I remember it was dropped to about 2, maybe a little less, a little more. In other words, this is the best my instruments at the time could, of course, resolve. So I just used those points and long as, because I think it's going to take us pretty much into the ballpark, as they say, and I read these 2 points now, where the two circles now intersect, circle number 2 and 3, at 1.05 plus J72, 1.05 minus J72 for demonstration purposes, stick over.
Okay, now that I see the method, I'm going to study it a little bit more, maybe not tonight. I think there's an error in it all. I think it gives you a moderately good ballpark figure for this particular example. I think your original example was 25 ohms resistance and 30 ohms of reactance. I wonder if you've tried it with other combinations, like say, for instance, the antenna that's 100 ohm resistance and let's say 30 ohms of reactance. I wonder if you've tried it with other combinations. Over to you, Mel, K2RIW.
Okay, I'm not finished. Okay, because I added that 0.5, that normalized resistance to 0.5, what I have to do now to get my exact reading, get it back to my exact, resistive and reactive reading, I now have to subtract 0.5 from the 1.05 point on the chart. I read 0.105 minus and plus J72. So I'm going to subtract 0.5 from the 105. So I wind up with 0.55 plus J 0.72 and 0.55 minus J.072. That's my two places on the chart now, and I'm considering which one of the cases is the resistive and the reactive measurement. Do you follow what I'm doing now? Over.
I think I do. I believe your next step is to resolve the ambiguity. Is it a capacitive reactance or an inductive reactance? Now that you believe you've pinned down the magnitude of the reactance. As you can tell, I'm having a little bit of trouble with the concept that got you to this point. But assuming that you are now accurately at these 2 points and you just have to resolve the ambiguity, I'm going to guess you're going to add a small amount of capacitance and see if the standing wave ratio gets better or worse. Quite possibly you're going to add that capacitance. You could do it in parallel or you could do it in series. In either case, you'll get... No, I'm guessing you're going to do it in series. When you add your new test capacitor in series, and you decide that the standing wave ratio is getting better, which means it was inductive, or worse, meaning that the original was a capacitor, I think that's what maybe you're going to do. But I'm guessing ahead. Go ahead, Mel.
Now we got these 2 points that we just set. 0.55. First we're going to multiply that back by 50 to get the resistance of 27.5 ohms. And we're going to multiply the 0.72 by 50 and we're going to get 36 ohms of reactance. Now we'd like to know that 27.5 ohm resistance and that reactive, is it plus or minus? Now we're going to add the capacitor in series. And what I used at that time was a radio capacitor, the 10365, at that time we called it an MM capacitor, and called PF, that is, now by capacitor, and I see the SWR getting, I know, SWR going up. I know it was capacitive, take over.
Yeah, you pushed the torque switch, jumped out about 8 times on that transmission. So when you added a series capacitor, and we missed the number of picofarad you added, but I guess I would have chosen a number of picofarad that has something like 20 ohms of capacitive reactance. when you add 20 ohms of capacitive reactance to the approximately 30 ohms of capacitive reactance of the original antenna, that makes the total capacitive reactance go to 50, which is worse, and therefore the visual will go up, and it tells you that the original was the capacitive reactance in that antenna, the unknown antenna. If it went down, you know that there was something like 30 ohms of inductive reactance. There's a way of also doing it in shunt, but in series is the more direct way, and that's what I think you're using. Worry a little bit about that push to talk switch somehow. K2KEY, K2LIW.
Just need a third hand here. Yeah, basically, in other words, where we have the situation, once we multiply it back to 50, to the original measure, the actual resistance and reactance, we have 27.5 ohms resistance, minus or plus the 36 ohms reactance, that we'd like to know which of the two. So if I put in that, if I use that variable capacitor, I could say it was an old radio, you know, common radio capacitor at the time on those 365 MMF capacitors, variable capacitors. If by rotating that, I see the SWR getting improved, I know the antenna was inductive. If I see the SWR getting worse, I know that the antenna is capacitive. So I know which one, whether I'm going to be 27.5 ohms now minus or 25 ohms plus, take over.
Connected KE2EJ.
Sounds like Eric just joined us. Hello, Eric. It's K2LIW in the check now. Mel, K2KEY. Mel, as I see it, a slight variation, although maybe I'm putting this in too soon, a slight variation of this technique, as long as you know you're operating at a low enough frequency, and with modern day, very miniature potentiometers, you can get a printed circuit type potentiometer that is so small that it has very little length to it, therefore it has very little inductive reactance. And you're doing this test at a very low power level, which everything can tolerate. Another possible variation would be to put a resistor in series at the antenna connection from the transmission line and twist the resistor, the potentiometer, until the standing wave ratio goes to minimum. Then I'm reasonably sure that in every case, you will be forcing the resistive component to be exactly 50 ohms. And then all you got to do is find out how much reactance is left over. Where that would break down is if the resistive component was bigger than 50 ohms. Of course, then you can't go for a minimum. No matter how much resistance you add, it's always going in the wrong direction. Then life gets a little more complicated. But maybe you didn't consider that, or maybe you already did and rejected it. K2KEY, K2LIW in the second half.
Oh, I did this many, many years ago, Dick. I came up with this idea, you know, how many years, I'm going back. I think I did this back in the 70s. I know. Why I run this by, if it's possible that it could work. I've tried it many times with different situations, and it seemed to be always close enough that it put me in the ballpark. Whenever I did it by this method, it seemed to be working pretty well for me. And I did submit it to ham radio to Jim Fisk, and he never even responded, so that's why I ran it by. I have to think of it because somebody asked me a question about making measurements with simple instruments, and that's what I had, a lot of simple things at the time to work with. So I was wondering if it is possible that they, or am I doing some kind of my own magic